Share Food with Jules Serkin. Eating and drinking our way around the food business.
And a warm good afternoon, listener, to the Share Food. You know what we're all about by now, but it's about eating and drinking our way around the world. And today, oh, anew, I'm afraid my Scottish accent is from the time spent when I was about three, and I was listening, sitting on my dad's knee, probably eating a banana sandwich, watching Dr. Kildare. And I do believe that the Scottish accent has evolved since then, a bit like the American when you used to watch the Westerns and John Wayne. That's how old I am. Cracking show for you today. We are celebrating all that is in the Scottish food industry. Very excited to be celebrating Scotland. What are your memories? Do tweet us in of Scottish, if you've ever been up north to Scotland across the border. What were your memories of food and where did you eat? Any nice memories of chefs that you met or things that you bought and tasted? Because, of course, it is the larder of Scotland, but it's like a natural larder, I'm thinking. So we're from fine Scottish salmon, some of the freshest we'll ever have. We've got the amazing Lance Foreman here, actually in front of me. You may have seen some pictures, and we've been eating the most delicious salmon, fresh, and the smell was just amazing. I wish you could smell it, listener, but you can't. So he's from H. Foreman and Sons Salmon, and they are the oldest makers of smoked salmon in the world, I believe. Good afternoon, Lance.
Good afternoon.
Nice to see you, and wearing your fetching brace. Wearing your fetching braces as well.
Well, they hold my trousers up, which is always a good thing.
Well, depends.
No, trust me, it's a good thing.
So, good afternoon, Lance. Sorry, I hadn't turned your mic up. You can say hello again to me.
Well, hello.
Yes.
Good to be here.
Loving it. Now, what's happened to your Scottish accent?
Well, I can't claim to have a Scottish accent. You see, the thing is, my great-granddad, who started our salmon smoking business, what he did is he took one of the best resources to come out of Scotland, Scottish salmon, and he converted it into what became perhaps one of the most famous gourmet foods across the Western world through the 20th century, smoked salmon. So the fish came from Scotland. The smoking was always done in London.
I see. So we're going to be hearing all about that from Lance Foreman and all about his ancestors and the taste, listener. Because when you've listened, you'll see why it tastes so different, and certainly very different from anything I've ever tasted. Then on the phone, we are talking to the fabulous foodie Fiona Richmond. She is from Scotland Food and Drink, and she's going to be telling us some exciting news about what they've been up to in 2015, the Scottish food industry. You can find them on at Scott Food Drink on the Twitter. And their website is foodanddrink.scot. So look them up, and she'll be telling us all about it. So that's Fiona Richmond. And then talking, of course, you may or may not know, it's National Game Week. And I love a bit of game. It's low in fat. It's healthy. So we will be talking to Jock Gibson from Macbeth's. Shall I say it's Scottish? Macbeth's. Or you were saying to me, Lance, it might be
Macbeth,
Scottish Butchers Online. And so he will be telling us how to pronounce it properly. I was very impressed when I looked him up on Twitter because he's actually got at Macbeth's Twitter handle. So he must have been on there from year dot to get that. Well done. So he'll be talking to us. He croaked at me this morning in a DM on Twitter that he had a sore throat. So I told him to gargle with some whiskey, some scotch. Maybe with some hot water, I don't know. So he'll be talking to us, and we will, of course, be taking all your tweets. And you can get me directly at Jules Serkin, S for sugar, E-R-K-I-N, or Share Radio UK. You can also text us, listener, very avant-garde here, 66777. Start your text with the word share, and we'll hear you on Share Food. Now, we're going to talk. I've been giving my lovely producer, Matthew Cook, He is, of course, a Scotch egg enthusiast, apparently. But we're weaning him off the pot noodles, aren't we, Matt? And this morning I brought him in some Scots porridge oats.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the porridge oats. You know, it's in the same similar receptacle as a pot noodle. So, you know, it's at least, you know, the flavour won't be the same, but the feeling is going to be quite similar.
And, you know, my planning on this, I've given you a little lecture about eating healthy. We're removing the mushrooms, we're removing the chicken from your pot noodle and all that high salt. So by buying you the plain one, Matty, you can add your own very healthy Scottish berries.
Well, yeah, this is what you said. It's going to be the canvas to which I can get creative and make my own morning meal.
Now, I'm wondering, when you say this is what I said, whether that sounds a little bit snappy to me. What do you think, Lance?
It's snappy. I'm open to the new food habits that you're going to be giving me. So yeah, I'm excited.
You can go and forage up in Scotland for berries. I'm sure you'll get an invite after this. So we're going to play. Are we going to play a little song, or are you going to read me some tweets? I've completely lost track.
That's okay. I'll read you some tweets.
We've got
some,
yeah, definitely. Have you got some Scottish reel? Let's Lance and I do a little reel.
Well, we've had some loads of tweets, retweets and follows since last week's show. People thought talking about healthy eating and healthy diets was really, really useful. But we had one email from Ingrid Eisfeld from Artisan Bread, who wanted to warn our listeners about gluten-free bread. She said that xanthan gum was a chemical used in fracking and cellulose, which bleached sawdust, and both have been found in certain dodgy products labelled as gluten-free bread.
That doesn't sound good, Matt.
No, it doesn't.
Fracking and bread.
No. So be careful. Sometimes it looks healthy, but it isn't. So read the label, friends. One of our guests, Fiona Richmond from Scotland Food and Drink, tweeted in pictures of a delicious-looking porridge bowl filled with berries this morning. And Contini Bites, who make Fiona's delicious-looking porridge, replied saying, "I wish I had that for breakfast this morning." Another, Fiona Kirk, who is a dietitian and fat loss expert and friend of the show, also tweeted in about breakfast, adding that antioxidant-rich berries can be frozen to enjoy delicious smoothies all year. Add nuts for protein kicks. And Kent Fine Foods tweeted in to suggest that next time Fiona should try her porridge with one of their award-winning rose and lavender jellies.
Well, that sounds like a lady's jelly, doesn't it? The sort of thing you'd, sort of thing you'd have on a chaise longue, Matt.
Well, yeah, I do generally relax on a chaise longue after a hard day at
radio. When you're being a lady.
Yeah, exactly, yes.
Okay, well, we're going to be hearing more from your tweets. Just tweet us at Share Radio UK and at Jules Serkin, which is my personal one. We'll get you. And, of course, the text 666777. If you want to mention for your foodie business, it's free and we will mention you if you tell us something interesting about the Scottish food industry. And also, we'd like your memories of Scotland. So if you remember sort of, well, Matt's going to do his impression later on of Sean Connery. Or was he Irish? I always forget. He was Scottish,
yes,
wasn't he?
Absolutely.
Yes,
very Scottish.
You're spot on, Lance. Mm. Must be all that fish, your brain. We're going over now for a lovely song to savour our smoked salmon with. It's the Clancy Brothers and Tommy Makem, Mary's Wedding. Can we say it in Scottish?
Mary's Wedding.
Okay. What you got, Matt?
Step gaily on we go, heel for heel and toe for toe, arm in arm and on we go, all for Mary's wedding. Over hill ways up and down, Merton green and bracken brown, past the sheen and through the town, all for sake of Mary. Step we gaily on we go, hill for hill and toe for toe, arm in arm and on we go, all for Mary's wedding. Plenty herring, plenty meal, plenty peat to fill her creel, plenty bonny bairns as weel, that's the toast for Mary. Step we gaily on we go, heel for heel and toe for toe, arm in arm and on we go, all for Mary's wedding. Cheeks as bright as rowans are, brighter far than any star, fairest of them all by far is my darling Mary. Step we gaily on we go, heel for heel and toe for toe, arm in arm and on we go, all for Mary's wedding. Over the hill ways up and down, that's the green and bracken brown, past the sheen and through the town, all for
Oh, we're really going for it here, doing lovely Scottish dancing. It was Clancy Brothers and Tommy Macam, I hope I'm saying his name correctly, Mary's Wedding. And of course, today we're talking, listener, about the rise of Scotland and a major foodie destination. So do tweet us in any of your food memories or things that you've tasted from Scotland. And on the phone now, we have Fiona Richmond. Fiona is from the Scotland Food and Drink. It's a not-for-profit organisation. You'll find them on our Twitter feed. And it was created to guide food and drink companies of all sizes towards increased profitability and, of course, visibility. Hello, Fiona.
Hello. Hi there. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you? It was lovely to talk to you yesterday when you were going through the Highlands.
Yes.
So tell me where you are and what you can see out of your window first of all, so I can get a little picture.
Yes, I'm very, very lucky to have a beautiful view. I'm sitting in the Balmoral Hotel, which is right in the centre of the city. I come here a lot and they've very kindly given me a quiet room, and I've got a stunning view of Edinburgh Castle and the Winter Wonderland, which just opened yesterday. So it's a sort of sunny and chilly day and very sort of festive. So, yes, I've got a beautiful view.
It sounds fantastic. Now, yeah. you were in at the start of your organisation, weren't you, Fiona?
Almost the start, yes. About a couple of years after we were formed. But the organisation and the industry, you know, continues to go from strength to strength. So I feel very lucky to be part of such a strong food community in Scotland, and an organisation that is, you know, that is doing very well. And yes, Scottish produce just continues to get better and better.
I'm just looking at some of the things that you were up to in 2015. And you're in, you're in the closing stages of Scotland's Year of the Food and Drink.
Yes, we are. We are indeed. Yeah, it's been a brilliant year. Well, 2014 was a huge year for us as well, because we worked really hard with all the big events of the Commonwealth Games and Ryder Cup and many other events that were taking place as well. All about, you know, getting better Scottish produce on menus and more visibility for our great food and drink products at home and abroad. And then we're very lucky that that led into a year-long celebration of our food and drink. And that was really about sort of say, telling the world, as well as people on our own doorstep, about the great food and drink products that are around and the stories behind them. I think the public really want to hear the stories about food, who made it, where they're from, and get close to producers. So we've been celebrating our produce all year round with different themes each month, to, you know, from delicious dairy to summer fruits and berries. And this month is hearty and heartwarming. We've had over 180 events and lots of really great things going on, and a big celebration about our food and drink.
How important, Fiona, are the small producers, the small Scottish food producers, with the work that you're doing?
Yeah, hugely important. I mean, about 80% of our businesses in Scotland, our food and drink businesses, are family run. And most of those are, you know, less than 10 employees. And I think in Scotland as a whole, you know, across all sectors, we've got a lot of, you know, small businesses that are absolutely, you know, vital to our economy and our culture. And we very much try and support businesses from the, you know, tiny one-man bands up to, you know, larger organisations and everything in between. We try and help all of them to grow and flourish. But there's absolutely no doubt that our small producers are play a really vital role, and we've got lots of great characters you know, behind the projects. And it's interesting to see also a lot of people who are maybe changing career to follow their love of food. I mean, I think that's happening across Britain as a whole.
Yes.
British food has undergone such a renaissance, and I love these stories. I love to hear about people who've got into food because that was their big passion. So,
and
yeah,
incredibly,
it's an exciting time in Britain.
Incredibly
whole, I think.
Incredibly hard work, you know, running a
very
small food
work.
Business, you're hands on, aside from the marketing of it and the websites and all the techie stuff,
yes,
you've actually got to make the produce, deliver the produce.
How are you? But they do it because they love it. And I've just was at a market this morning down in Leith, a new market, and met a couple of producers that I know really well, Peel and Farm, who produce the most amazing organic charcuterie that's won a lot of awards. You know, and it's a cold day to be out there at the markets, but it's such an important outlet for them. So, yeah, I always think about the people at this time of year when it's chilly who are out there on stalls selling their food and talking to the public.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they do a great job.
And how important is the shop local and the support local hashtag on Twitter? Are you using that now for the farmers markets and things?
We use Eat Scottish as our hashtag, but you know, we encourage people to absolutely you know, discover and get to know the producers around them. That's, you know, crucially important to build relationships with the people who make food, and to seek them out and get to know them, and because that's really what it's all about. So yeah, we encourage people to look at what's produced around them. And indeed, you know, Scotland's a small country, so we just want to raise awareness of the beautiful food that we grow and produce and catch, etc.
And I've got, I know that you're based in Edinburgh, am I correct? But
yes.
How far is your spread there in Scotland? Do you do the whole of Scotland? And
yes,
the islands?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We help companies, you know, across the entire country and in Highlands and Islands, and you know, right down to borders, the Fleece and Galloway, and everything in between. I was out in the Outer Hebrides for the first time a few weeks ago, speaking at a tourism conference, and met some, you know, some good food and drink producers over there, and a new distillery actually, which is really big news when a distillery opens on you know, the Isle of Harris. So amazing gin they're producing at the moment, until the whiskey is ready. But we've got, yeah, about over 50 artisan gin producers in Scotland now. And again, I know that's a sort of trend, you know, nationwide. So that's quite exciting.
Well, and I know that you've recently smashed your growth target, and you're now
worth
a grand spanking 14.3 billion.
Yes. I mean, it's the fastest growing sector of the Scottish economy.
Incredible.
So we just, yeah, I know, it really is. It's amazing. Yeah, exports obviously, you know, play a big part of that too, but it's all about growing our produce around the world, but very much, you know, being a land of food and drink ourselves here at home.
I mean, it just shows all the hard work that you've done, and it's paying off, and congratulations to you. So
thank you.
What is what have you got in store for next year? Have you got plans? Because I know you've organised some awards. Have they been and gone, or are you doing those now?
No. Well, every year we host what we call the Oscars of the food and drink industry, which again seem to be just getting bigger and bigger. And this year we had our highest ever number of entries and our highest ever number of attendees. We had more than 800 people came to celebrate the creme de la creme of the food and drink industry. So our next awards will be probably next May or June. And it's a really important event for our food and drink community. And winning an award, or even, you know, being shortlisted, can mean, you know, a huge amount for businesses. And they're open to companies of, you know, anywhere in Scotland and of any shape and size. But it can really help to open doors, you know, for these businesses if they win, or just even, you know, being shortlisted, or even just entering them actually, because, you know, everyone gets really good feedback from the expert panel of judges, and that can really help move the businesses on. But, you know, our work, although the Year of Food and Drink is coming to an end, we'll continue, you know, to promote the land of food and drink and help our businesses and continue to improve the reputation and enhance the reputation of our food and drink. So, yes, the work doesn't end at the end of December.
And I love the fact, Fiona, that you get people working together as project manager of Scotland Food and Drink. And so, I mean, in the studio, you're here later on when you listen back. We've got Lance Foreman. And when you were talking about gin, we've actually been tasting some of his amazing gin. So, you know, keep listening, because maybe there's a little Scottish tie in there for you.
Excellent. Yeah, well, it's quite amazing what's happening in the gin world. And Scotland actually has quite a long history of gin production, and that's really revived recently. But also beer, again, now that's a UK trend as well. We've got more than 100 craft brewers in Scotland. And the bit you were saying before about people working together, and this is, you know, quite an important point about collaboration. As an industry, we foster that collaboration. We get people to work together, but we're finding that producers are doing the same. So there's a brilliant organisation, it's the Brewers Association of Scotland, that's bringing the brewers together to work together to market themselves, and it really does help put these companies on the, you know, the international stage, and encourage people to come to Scotland, you know, to taste the beer and the particular products that we have over here.
So a real, you know, buzz there going on in Scotland, Fiona. I'm going to read out at the end your websites and things, but you're working very closely also with tastefortourism.scot as well. I mean, we're going to finish with you now, I'm afraid, but we must get you on again.
I would love to. I'd absolutely love to. And I'll come down to the studio and we can do some tastings.
Exactly.
We'll taste some great Scottish produce.
Well, I'm thinking
that will be a pleasure.
I'm thinking that lovely gin with your Scottish berries and all that you've got going there. It's amazing.
Cheese, lovely cheese, Scotch beef, Scotch lamb, seafood.
You're on the guest
we'll
list.
Yeah, thank you. I'll bring a nice hamper and we can have a good time.
Thank you very much, Fiona. You have a rest of your lovely day and enjoy
thank
all
you,
that Scotland thank offers. Thank you very
thank
much.
You. It's a pleasure. Thank you for your time. All the best.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. That was the lovely Fiona Richmond there telling us all about the amazing natural larder that's going on in Scotland in the beginning of winter as we go in. I'm seeing a crisp, sunny morning there. You can find them on the Twitter at @ScotFoodDrink. And on Facebook at Eats Scottish, and lots of websites to read out to you. But let's just say 3Ws, foodanddrink.scot, and you'll find everything you need there. Get behind them and support them. And bringing in now the lovely Lance and Matt, if he's chirping on in the background. I don't know if he's there. But what do you think, Lance? I saw you leaping up and down with excitement there when listening to Fiona, just before we speak to our next. We're going to speak to you, I think. You're next.
Great.
What did you think? Do you know Fiona? Or
I don't know Fiona, but
what
I really loved was the fact that all these artisan producers is suddenly just coming out of nowhere because, you know, people are so interested nowadays in the provenance of food and, you know, where it is made and how it is made and so on. And, you know, we think that's great. Mm. You know, obviously we've been making our own food, smoked salmon for over 100 years. We're not a big business. People often think we're a big business because we've been around a long time. But, you know, that interest and that passion that people have for food is, you know, it's fantastic. It really is.
I mean, you can see the obvious tie in there with gin. I mean, we've been tasting your... Just run us through what you brought us in to eat in the Share Radio studio. Just to remind the listener, we're talking to the amazing Lance Foreman, and he's brought in incredible, incredible salmon. And you're listening to Share Food. And so do tweet in at Share Food UK and at Jules Serkin. We want to hear your questions. But remind us what you've brought
in. Well, the platter that we've been tasting, Jules, is an array of different types of smoked salmon and different types of cured salmons that we do.
Mm-hmm.
So curing salmon is a way of preserving it before you then smoke it. But you don't have to smoke it. You could just cure it. So our smoked salmon that we brought along is what we refer to as our London cure. That is what we're famous for. And
yes.
And what makes our smoked salmon different from most smoked salmons is that, and this may sound a bit ridiculous, it tastes of salmon.
It's so fresh. And I said to you, and I didn't know whether I was almost a faux pas, but it tastes to me like the best sashimi I've ever had because it's so fresh. And the smell is just incredible.
And that's how smoked salmon should be. You know, if you taste smoked salmon and it's very slimy or it's very smoky and you can't actually taste the fish, that is not good smoked salmon. That's not indeed how smoked salmon should be. What you really want to do is just get the freshest piece of fish you can get your hands on and do as little to it as possible just to preserve the taste of the fish. And that's why we use Scottish salmon, because Scottish salmon is here. We can get it within 24, maximum 48 hours of coming out of water.
Because we were talking about this, weren't we? The whole Norwegian thing, where it would take 4 days to come across.
That's right.
Tell us about that.
2/3, perhaps even nearly 3/4 of salmon sold in Britain nowadays comes to Britain from Norway. It's not Scottish salmon. Some of it's even smoked in Scotland, and they call it Scottish smoked salmon because it's smoked in Scotland.
Mm.
But there's nothing wrong with Norwegian salmon. The problem is that in this country, it takes 4 days to get here, so it's never going to be as fresh as Scottish salmon. And if you don't...
And we should be supporting you.
We should be
Scotland.
Supporting Scotland. Absolutely. We should be supporting Scottish salmon.
Much as we love the Norwegians.
No problem with Norwegians. It's just that time delay. That really is a problem. Because
4 days is huge.
Because if you smoke that fish and you keep it very delicate, as smoked salmon should be, the taste isn't that pleasant because the fish is, you know, just not very fresh. And
well,
so
was...
you have to give it a lot of smoke to conceal the lack of freshness of the fish, and then it just tastes very smoky. You need 30 chewing gums to get rid of the taste of the smoke.
I was going to ask you about that, because often when you have smoked salmon, what puts people off, I think, is it's often very slimy.
Mm.
You get that grey edges, and it's just, yours had this beautiful bite. So why is that, that sliminess and perhaps over salty? And
well, if you go back 15 or 20 years, you know, you just mention those two words, smoked salmon, and people go, oh, smoked salmon. You know, it was a real treat. It was something very, very special. You'd have it on occasions because it was quite expensive. Mm. And over the last 15 years, it's become so commercialised, so mass produced. And I would say the product has actually been ruined. And the main thing is that sliminess. You know, when you preserve the fish, the way you do it is by drawing out the moisture. You cure it in dry rock salt. You then air dry it and smoke it. And you lose about 20% of the weight when you do that. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, if you're producing it and you're selling it by the pound or by the kilo, and you've lost 20% of your weight, you've lost 20% of your turnover. So what all these mass producers try and do is avoid the weight loss. They keep the moisture there. And then it turns out slimy. It's just not very pleasant.
So really, in a way, when public are asking for things cheap, it's our own fault, possibly, that we're getting, you know, we're getting this messing around. So who's buying yours, and where can we actually get it?
Well, we sell it obviously to a lot of top restaurants and chefs.
Heard Boris is a fan.
Boris is a huge fan of our smoked salmon.
That's our mayor.
Thank
if you're
you,
listening
Boris.
Abroad, Boris Johnson.
Thank you, Boris. Boris is a huge fan. We've even launched a product named after him called the Boris Bagel, where we do this beautiful traditional bagel with our smoked salmon. But you know, we sell it in obviously the very upmarket places like Harrods and Selfridges, but in Waitrose, Ocado, and of course our own home delivery service, Foreman and Field. So people can literally come online, and when they buy it from us, it's literally, you know, it comes out of our kilns, out of our smokehouse at 3:30 in the morning. It's sliced there and then they get it the next day. You
Incredible.
Cannot get fresher smoked salmon.
So they could be just opening their door and it's posted to them, and they start eating it for breakfast.
Absolutely.
And that's UK-wide?
UK, anywhere in the UK. And when they taste it, you know, we get this reaction. It happens time and time again. You know, we meet people, we do tastings. We often do these sort of, you know, tastings at festivals. And the instant reaction when we ask people if you'd like a taste, they say, no, thanks. I'm not really that sure. Now, they wouldn't have said that 20 years ago. They'd say, what, you're giving away smoked salmon?
Yeah,
absolutely, I have it.
Bitten your hand off, exactly.
But now the first, you know, reaction's not that great. And then we, you know, we force them. We say, look, have a taste of ours.
You force people.
Well, we don't force, but we, you know, really.
I do that with Matt, my producer.
Sometimes, you know, sometimes like your children, you know, you just gotta
eat your
greens. Just try it, and if you don't like it, don't be embarrassed. Just say so, and then they try it and they taste it. Oh my god, that's delicious! If I knew smoked salmon tasted like that, I would love it.
And, so, you've also got this a restaurant, Foreman's Restaurant, and it's based in East London.
It is. It's based in the smokehouse. So we have a viewing gallery into the smokehouse. And if you look out the window in the other direction, you see the Olympic Stadium. We are the closest building in London to the Olympic Stadium. And in fact, we used to be on the running track of the Olympic Stadium, but we were forcibly evicted by our former mayor, Ken Livingstone, which is, of course, why Boris is such a huge fan of ours, because he was the new mayor at the time.
That sounds incredible. We're going to play a little song now so everybody can rush off and look at your website. And shall I read out the foreman's.co.uk one? Does that suit
you? It is. Well, Foreman and Field is probably the best one.
Okay.
No E in Foreman's, F-O-R-M-A-N.
Very
Foreman
important
and Field.
To remember. And also for the venue, you have this unique venue. It would be foremansfishisland.com.
Foreman's Fish Island. Yes, we have a restaurant, we have a venue. We even have an art gallery. Because the part of London
Sue
where...
Sue Tilly, I heard.
Sue Tilly was our last exhibition. She was the muse.
We're never going to get this record played, Matt. Sorry, carry on.
She was the muse
or
model that sat for that very famous painting by Lucian Freud.
Yeah.
Benefit
she was an oversized,
arresting.
Wasn't she? Or am I...
Oversized is a very polite word. That's perfect.
Sweet. And, plus size.
Lucian Freud sold that painting, or that painting was sold for $50 million. It was the highest price that any living artist ever sold a painting for. He paid her £20 a day to sit as a model. So she obviously came
now
to...
Now, when was this?
Well, this was a few years ago.
So, I mean, how many years? Was £20 good or bad? That's what I'm getting at.
Oh, I don't know.
I'm wondering whether to give up my day job.
Well, she obviously didn't think it was that good, because she's now decided it makes a lot more sense to be an artist than a model. So she just launched her very first ever art exhibition at us, and it's been on for the last month. It was very successful, and I guess you'll see a bit more of Sue Tilly as the years
Sounds
go
very
by.
Exciting. Now, while we tuck into this smoked salmon, we're going to go over to producer Matt, the long-suffering oats eater, and see if he's going to play some orange juice, Rip It Up, which apparently is Scottish. I had no idea. Matt.
When I first saw you, something stirred within me. You were standing sultry in the rain. If I could have held you, I would have held you, rip it up and start again. Rip it up and start again. Rip it up and start again. I hope to God you're not as dumb as you make out. I hope to God. I hope to God. And I hope to God I'm not as dumb as you. I hope to God, I hope to God. And when I next saw you, my heart reached up for you. My arms stuck like glue to my sides. If I could have held you, I would have held you. With your brother. Things in life that one can't quite express. You know me, I'm acting dumb, dumb. You know the seed is very humdrum. And my favorite song's entitled
Oh, and that was Orange Juice and Rip It Up. It didn't sound particularly Scottish, but you do know our editor-in-chief, Donald, is Scottish, so he chose it for me. Remind us, coming in on tweets if you want to, at Share Radio UK, or tweet me directly at Jules Serkin with your memories of Scotland and food and any producers. And Matt, who is on the Twitter or any events you've got?
Well, we've got a few people that's tweeted in. We had Ken at Tea Traffic Law tweeted to tell us his favourite breakfast is Scottish pancakes. Obviously, ooh. We've got another one from Fiona.
That's Sunil. Oh, that's Sunil, not Ken. You're making up these names. You can't rebrand people.
Well, it's all about rebranding in this day and age, you know, quickly as soon as possible.
I think his parents might have something to say. You call him Ken.
Well, you know, I mean, I changed my name to Matthew Cook before I was Jennifer, so they were quite upset about that. But, you know,
there's far too much Scottish reeling going on.
And then we got another tweet from the Barrister Broker. He just tweeted us to say that I've just tuned in to the shockingly gorgeous Jules Serkin. Look at that.
Isn't he supposed to be having 40 winks before he goes out?
Well, I think he's had 10, woke up and had a little listen, I think. Yeah, and then we got the final one from Fiona Kirk. Said, Sifu provides good fats for heart, brain and bone health. Try my Kedgeree recipe. Pedigree Kedgeree recipe. It's all about rebranding here at Share Radio.
No, I love that. Have you got sort of Scottish teeth in today?
Yes.
Possibly. Bit long in the tooth. So are we going to go over to the fabulous Jock Gibson now?
Yes.
So Jock Gibson, listener, let me just tell you about him. He is running Macbeth's Butchers. It's a family-run business that we love and we support on Share Food that provides high-quality meat products through the UK. And the beef is mostly provided from their farm, which is Edenvale in Upper Upland Moray, where they rear traditional Scottish native breeds. They're reared in a natural environment as possible, fed grass, home-grown hay or silage, and no growth promoters, which I love. You know, get it back to natural, like Lance and I were saying at the beginning. So joining me now on the phone, a listener on Share Radio, we've got Jock Gibson from Macbeth's Butchers. Hello, Jock.
Good afternoon. How are you?
And how is your little throat? That's what I'm most concerned about.
Well, I've been gargling with whiskey as suggested.
Yes. Well, you know, were you burning the candle at both ends last night and not resting before your interview?
Well, it's been a bit like that over the last couple of weeks, to be honest. We're sort of gearing up for Christmas now, and we've got quite a lot going on the farm. So there's never enough hours in the day.
Now, Jock, can you just get a little bit more broad Scottish from you? Because I'm not feeling the Scots here. What can you see anything out of your window, first of all?
Well,
gorgeous?
I'm sort of looking at a heap of scaffolding because I was travelling down to Glasgow this morning down the snowy A9. So I'm now in the centre of Glasgow looking at a building with scaffolding outside it.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Oh, well, that's not quite. I thought you were going to say a Hereford. Tell me, I know it's National Game Week this week, and game is huge for you, I'm assuming, venison. And tell me a bit about your meat business.
Yeah, so we specialise in beef from our own farm, but we also go to other local farms for lamb and pork, and then we go to estates, mainly up and down the northwest of Scotland, for venison and game and all those sort of little add-ons. Venison is probably our second biggest seller after beef, especially at this time of year, the run-up to Christmas.
Mm. And of course, venison, I would think, even though it's not organic, it's probably as natural as you can possibly get it.
Certainly the stuff that we're getting is it's all wild venison.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're all out in the hill and never come in contact with anything that's not on the hill.
And are you shooting them yourself, Jock?
I do myself, but no, by and large, the animals that we're getting in for the shop are shot on estates by, you know, qualified keepers. Mm. And it's done in a proper fashion.
Okay. And when I said that you're based on your farm in Edenvale in Moray, can you just tell listeners down here in London and in the UK where Moray might be?
So Moray is about halfway between Inverness and Aberdeen.
Okay.
So we look out on the Moray Firth, which is the bit of water that comes in from the North Sea.
Gorgeous.
So our farm is at about 600 feet, and we're just a small farm. It's mostly grass. But we also grow things like stubble neeps for the cattle during the winter. And we rent other ground as well locally.
And were you born onto the farm, Jock? Was it your dad's farm?
Yes. So my father bought the farm in the mid-70s.
Mm-hmm.
And then we bought the butcher shop in the mid-80s. But I was born and bred on the farm.
So I'm assuming you've got some really interesting native breeds. Can you just run me through a few of them and why they taste different, your beef?
Okay, so we started off life with a Highland herd. So they're the nice fluffy cows with horns that you see on all the tourist postcards.
Yeah.
The shaggy ones,
yeah.
Exactly. And then we also use Shorthorn Bull and we use Aberdeen Angus. So Aberdeen Angus, world famous, everybody knows about it. Shorthorn, little less known, but it is a great bull for improving beef carcasses in terms of shape and conformation. And we stick with the traditional native breeds because they suit the ground that we're farming on.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to mature more slowly, so you get much more flavour in the meat when you come to eating it.
And when you bought the butchers, this intrigues me. So you were farming, and what was the idea behind buying the shop to sell rather than just, supplying other butchers?
The plan was to try and cut out middlemen and make the whole enterprise slightly more profitable by going direct to market ourselves. It was sort of like a farm shop before farm shops became as common as they are today. So that was the basis behind it.
And what about, is there any difference in the way that you would butcher as opposed to my lovely English butcher? I have a fabulous butcher in Tankerton. I live in Whitstable, which is famous for oysters. You must pop down one day. We could do a house swap, couldn't we, Jock?
You know. There you go. You could be up here and feeding cows.
Yeah, I've got the boots.
Absolutely.
So is your butchery, the way that you do it, any different for flavour? You can say no. It was just a whim of a question I had.
No. I mean, one of the big things that we do, certainly for our beef and for lamb and venison as well, it's quite important, is we hang the beef for a minimum of 3 weeks. And what that does is it, A, tenderizes the beef, and it also enhances the flavour that's in the carcass.
Mm, it sounds delicious. And I love it, I think. So if people want to get, could someone in the UK get mail order from you?
Yes. So the only time we have a problem is when water gets in the way. But even then, with links, transport links as they are these days, it's not often a huge issue. So, yeah, you can order online or give us a ring. We love to talk to people. And we'll send it by an overnight courier. So it leaves us on, say, midday on a Tuesday. It's with the customer Wednesday morning.
I'm loving this because we've got in the studio, we have Lance Foreman, who is also going to deliver my smoked salmon. So I've got it sorted now for Christmas. Got my beef and I've got my salmon. Is there a last Christmas mail order sort of date that you can give listeners?
We're looking to try and get all our orders in for the 19th of December. Our last dispatch is Monday the 21st or Tuesday the 22nd in exceptional circumstances. The reason for that is that we're hanging beef now for Christmas, so we need to allocate it to the customers when they order.
Of course, I've just been snapped up by Matt, my producer, that of course UK and Scotland are in one country, so I do apologise. It seems a long way away to me. I thought you were on a different time zone, you know, all those dark nights and things.
It sometimes feels like that.
It was dark when I got up this morning. I'm right on the seafront. I could barely open my front door this morning coming out because we've got, I think, a bit of that hurricane. What was his name? Barney.
We're on Barney this time round, yes.
Yeah. And tell me about, very quickly, because I need to move on and eat some salmon. It's not all hard work here, Jock, but the salmon awaits. But
it's sounding tough.
Yeah, it is. But we were chatting, weren't we, yesterday about haggis, and it's actually illegal in USA, and I found that rather odd. So lamb lung is banned and has been banned since 1976. Tell me that in a nutshell.
Yes. So in the early 1970s, the USA decided to ban lamb lung and all products associated therewith. And I think it's an issue that they have with what can fluid getting into the lungs at slaughter. So that has been the situation, which has meant that haggis has not been able to be exported to America, or traditional haggis anyway, which would contain lamb lung. So, and there's been big talks over that at the moment, because there's a lot of people in America that want haggis.
I see. Well, that is, yeah, I can see that being a niche product, but I actually love haggis. And what about the Scotch egg? Is that really Scottish?
Now that's a bit beyond my ken. All I know is that they're delicious.
Oh, can you say that in Scottish, John? Come on. Beyond my ken. Please, have a go.
Beyond my ken. We were lucky enough to be eating lots of Scotch eggs in Edinburgh last weekend. I don't know if they originate from Scotland or not.
Well, we'll find out.
I assume they must do.
I've got a lovely picture of them. For now, lovely Jock Gibson, your throat's lasted very well. And Jock Gibson of Macbeth's Butchers in Moree. Welcome to venison season, everybody. It's www.macbeths.com to find them out and say that you heard them on Share Radio. You have a lovely day and I hope your throat improves.
Thank you. And you.
And we'll speak to you very soon.
Speak soon. Cheers.
Bye. And that was amazing, Jock Gibson. They're very interesting with his grass-fed beef and why it might taste different. Let's go over to Matthew and see how he's getting on with his porridge oats this morning. Or this afternoon?
Well, you know, I've gotten too used to having Scottish music behind me, so I'm just going to have to carry that on.
Where's your K-League?
There you go. Well, I'd just like to say that it's
have
a fantastic
experience.
Have you
got any kedgeree there?
I've got a kedgeree porridge. It's lovely. No, I'm a convert. I think I'm ready to have porridge every morning for the rest of my life.
Your mother is going to love me.
I think she's been trying to get me on porridge for quite a while now, but yeah, I think you've succeeded where she's failed.
You know that I've somehow out there, in the frenzy of eating Lance Foreman's beautiful salmon, I've lost all the farmers markets list. I've been shuffling, can't find it.
I've got a farmers market list right here. Would you like me to go for some farmers markets?
I love
markets?
That, Matt. Tell me. And can you do it in Scottish, please?
In Scottish? You want me to do it in Gaelic or in a really bad, slightly patronising Scottish accent? Well, the south side Langside hails. No, I'm not going to do that. South side Langside hails every first and third Saturday of the month, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. or Partick Mansfield Park every second and fourth Saturday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Glasgow's Farmers Market brings a taste of rural Scotland to the city by giving residents access to a diverse range of affordable, healthy and locally produced food. What do you think about that?
I think it's marvellous, absolutely marvellous.
We've also got Edinburgh Farmers Market, Castle Terrace, every Saturday from 9 a.m. till 2 p.m. The Edinburgh Farmers Market takes place on Castle Terrace under the spectacular backdrop of Edinburgh's castle. Listed by Lloyd Grossman as one of the world's best farmers markets, and now in its 15th year, we have a huge variety of fresh local produce from over 50 specialist producers. What do you think of that?
Lance, pass me a bit of your gin-infused smoked salmon while Matt goes on. I'm just eating that, you know. Sorry, you can't have any.
I want to hear the sound effects of food whilst I talk about these markets. We've got the Perth Festival of Chocolate in King Edward Street, Perth. Saturday, 21st
this
of November,
is delicious,
9 a.m.
Matt.
At 8 p.m.
Don't you wish you were here?
I'm at the moment, this side. No, I've got my porridge.
But look at this salmon. Look, listener, it's just amazing.
I can see it.
That's fresh.
That is amazing.
Carry on.
No. Well, there's also, to finish up, we've got St Andrew's Day Festival, Scotland Street Marketplace, Perth City, on Sunday the 29th of November. To celebrate Scotland's National Day, St Andrew's Day is the Scotland Street Marketplace in Perth City. Spread a little happiness, kilt yourself up, swathe yourself in a sultry Highland dance at the sample of some of the finest food and drink from Scotland's natural larder. Salmon, smokies, whiskey or fruit wine, haggis or honey, porridge or Perthshire oat cakes. We have it all, they say.
Gosh, there's a lot of S's in that thing.
I think I did well on the S's. So I'm going to finish off with a few more tweets and then we'll be done. That's Fiona Kirk is tweeting in again saying, venison has the lowest fat, highest protein content and more iron than any other farmed red meat.
Oh, she must have been listening.
Yeah, she has. And she's also said, game birds are excellent source of selenium and an important immune-boosting mineral.
And we love a game bird on this show.
Hey, there we go. And Nurse Liz from Maryland in the US tweeted in about the US haggis ban. Crazy oat stuffed stomach sounds delicious. I don't think she's. I think there's a bit of sarcasm from Nurse Liz there.
She's one of my most sarcastic listeners, Nurse Liz. But she's a nurse, so we let her on.
On my own, I love haggis. I think it's fantastic.
I do.
I'm one of the few English people that just loves haggis.
Are you English? I thought you were from Moray.
No, my accent does confuse people.
Thanks for that, Matt. And I just want to go over quickly to Lance before we wrap up the show. It's so sad. Can we ask Donald Leggett, our editor-in-chief? We need a two-hour show, don't we, Lance?
At least.
Because, I mean, most of it was spent eating, let's face it. Just run us through very quickly. One of the hardest things about running your business, because we have a lot of business listeners, you know, listening. Hmm. What is, in your opinion, the hardest thing that you're doing at the moment to grow?
I think the hardest thing is just keep, you know, you just got to keep the same thing going, not to try and make too many changes. You know, it's very tempting to try and change and innovate and so on. But actually, when you're onto a good thing, just being able to keep that standard going day after day after day. And especially for us, you know, we're supplying all these top chefs and some of them are completely, you know, you've seen them on TV.
Yeah,
You know, they're not easy people to deal with.
I have a few favourites. I can't mention, but I have a few of them are my weaknesses.
But so, that you know, that is the challenge. You know, we're four generations. I've got some kids. Do they want to come in and be the fifth generation? Who knows? I don't know. But just keeping the thing going and, you know, not, you know, it's like steering a ship.
And did you want to, or were you sort of pressured, or did you actually want to? Were you enthusiastic?
I always love food, as you can tell.
Mm. No, you're very snake-hipped.
So I always knew that I would go into it, but I did spend 10, 12 years doing other stuff first. And, you know, I think that in any family business, you know, you'd always want the next generation to get experience outside.
So where people can find you, I'm just going to round up now. Three, listener, you can find the lovely restaurant, formansfishisland.com, formansfield.co.uk. I'd like to say a big thank you to everybody that tweeted in, and keep your texts and tweets coming for next week. Next week, listener, we're getting a little bit Christmassy. We're going to get Matt some jingle bells, and it's Christmas preparation. So we're going to be talking to a farmer, Charles Tassel. He's going to be coming into the studio talking about turkeys and Christmas meats and things. And then we have the lovely Kate Brazier. She's the wife of Julian Brazier, MP, but she doesn't like me to tell anyone. Oops, sorry, I've just announced it. And she'll be talking to us about Christmas puds and preparation for that, and whether you keep your cake under the bed and feed it every night. Lots going on, so if you want some to text in your questions or tweet us in at Jules Serkin, at Share Radio UK for next week, and we will read out your questions. Big thank you, of course, to our guests for coming on. We had Fiona Richmond from the Scotland Food and Drink, doing all that amazing work there with tourism and food producers in Scotland. Thank you for coming on the phone, Fiona. And also Jock Gibson from Macbeth's Scottish Butchers. And you've been listening to me, Jules Serkin. And we're live here every Saturday. Do join us at 2 p.m. We've got fabulous Lance Foreman in the studio with me, and we're toddling off to have our smoked salmon, aren't we, Lance?
Certainly are.
Sorry, Matt, not much left. But for now, from all of us, from Matt, from me and from Lance in the studio, it's a goodbye.
That was Share Food with Jules Serkin. Back every Saturday at 2 o'clock on Share Radio.